Alrighty then, like Peter Sagal would say.
Okay.
All right, you are tuned in to Lightly on the Ground Radio, produced at Richmond Independent Radio and broadcast on WRIR LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. For the past few years, we've explored our food system, from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. We focused on what each guest brought to growing and sustaining our food system, and it's included farmers talking about how they've grown food and how they harvest their crops, and scientists discussing the impact of mining and milling uranium in the Commonwealth. So when I was invited to talk about co-housing on the show, I saw that how we live is another facet of sustainability. Let me introduce our guests. Adele McLean, Jana Hayes, Anne Zibaldo are all here. Actually, Anne is here by Skype, but Jana and Adele are in the studio. Why don't you just say a few words about what brings you here and so that we identify your voices.
Thanks so much, Sunny. I'm Adele McLean, and I'm here because co-housing in Richmond is something that I think needs to happen. It's a fascinating and exciting opportunity for us. It's new to this area of the country for many, many people, mm-hmm. although there are some co-housing communities we want to help tell everyone about.
Great. And Jana?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm really interested in co-housing because I have been exploring co-housing since the idea first came up about 30 years ago. I read the original book, and I would really very much like to live in a co-housing community, and I'm hoping that we can get one off the ground here in Richmond.
Wait, great. And Anne Zibaldo?
Hi, yeah, Anne Zibaldo here in Washington, D.C., and I've been working in co-housing for more than 20 years. I actually live in co-housing, and I've helped build two co-housing communities, and I'm looking forward to helping get co-housing off the ground in the beautiful town of Richmond, Virginia.
Well, so is it the same as an intentional community or a commune, Anne?
Co-housing is one of the types of intentional communities. Yes, it is. But it's slightly different. Usually intentional communities are associated with an ideology or with a personality or some foundational principles. And co-housing is generally, these are small-scale communities. Cluster their housing around a central common building we call a common house, and they are not ideological. They are just simply neighbors, people who want to be good neighbors with each other and who want to have that sense of connection and who want to live in what I call the old-fashioned community of the future, the communities that we yearn for that we never grew up in.
You know, that's actually my experience with co-housing. I've had conversations about it. So how do we go about getting there from here? I mean, are there typical, there must be commonalities among the people. How do you go about getting from dreaming about it to actually making it happen? What's going on in Richmond, Adele?
Well, we have a small group we call Richmond Co-Housing. That's our working title anyway for now, till we have a piece of property perhaps that we can use as the basis for a new name. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is gathering people who are interested, people who may have the resources to actually become homeowners, but we may have room for renters too, we hope, in a new community that we hope to create. And we want to create a critical mass of people, maybe as many as 10 who are interested and have the means and can be part of this intentional community.
How have you gone about getting from where Adele says we are to actually having these communities that you've helped to found?
Sure. I think the essential thing to do with a group, there are two ways that, or multiple ways that co-housing can get started. It can be just like they're doing in Richmond, a group of people who have a common interest get together and say, you know, we really like to live together. And then there's another way, which is a developer, a professional says, you know, I really want to do co-housing, so I'm going to find a piece of property or I'm going to find a group and I'm going to build this community. I think the way that people get together and just start by meeting each other is the way that co-housing was done in the beginning, because there were no professionals working in the co-housing niche. Now there are professionals, and what I would say is as soon as possible, any group that's thinking of really going through with this and really wants this to happen, you absolutely have to work with a professional. This is too big a process. It's too risky, and it's a pretty overwhelming process to do on your own. So as soon as possible, you know, you need to find a developer, find professionals, who know something about co-housing and who can lead you through the process, working with you, not doing it for you, but working with you to give you your community. So you are co-creating the community together, and you're custom designing not a house, you're custom designing a neighborhood together, professionals and the future residents.
So are you generally speaking of new development, new buildings, new...
No, not necessarily. In fact, Richmond is wonderful because Richmond has a lot of historic house, both housing stock and commercial stock, just ripe for adaptive reuse. And Richmond is one of the places, this is where it's happening. It's an opportune city to be working in. It's going through a cultural transformation. It still has a lot of funky buildings, historic in nature, great neighborhoods where you can do some creative things, co-housing being one of the creative things. So there's opportunity, there's tax credits for developers who are savvy about using tax credits. There are tax credits available both for affordable housing and for historic adaptive reuse. And so this makes Richmond very ideal to be doing something as innovative as co-housing, unlike in some places where, you know, cities are built out and, they're just not interested in doing anything a little too different. And co-housing isn't actually all that different. It's pretty mainstream, but it is mainstream housing. But, you know, Richmond is just an ideal place right now.
Jana, do you have anything to say about the sustainability aspect of co-housing?
As the budgets for services become cut, it's going to be more important for us to be able to do more in our own communities, and we can be more efficient in our own communities. We can make better use of the Earth's resources. People tend to do more in their community without the need for so many travel miles. Mm-hmm. So I think it can be very efficient in addition to building with efficient materials and generally living a more sustainable life. We can do our own food production. So it can be a very sustainable way of living.
And it seems like if you're sharing a common house, there's probably common grounds that one would be that the group would be sharing. And
there are common grounds, and there's frequently a garden that can be used to grow food.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't need a tiller for every household. You would have a tiller that would serve the whole community.
And lawnmowers and maybe even car sharing.
How does the social culture, I mean, how do the people get set up? I mean, is there a hierarchy? Is there like a club? What goes on with the society?
One of the main features, Sunny, of any co-housing community is a process, a democratic process, non-hierarchical. I think that's a key to one of the main aspects of co-housing. And there are many others, too, that we'd probably like to share with you and your listeners. Some of the features, for example, that we saw when we recently traveled to Shadow Lake Village in Blacksburg were things like, of course, the common house that Ann mentioned. That's key. We saw communal meals, not every meal by any means, but at least once or twice a week, the whole community comes together in the common house, and they rotate cooking responsibilities, for example. They have an emphasis in their governance. They have a governance model, something like a homeowners association, mm-hmm. and they use consensus in how they arrive at decisions for the community. They keep cars on the fringe of the community so that it's a safe area for children, for elderly people within the pedestrian paths and whatnot inside the community. But cars are sort of banished to the outside. Mm-hmm. Anne's already mentioned the clustered housing. That's an emphasis, too, because that gives you, as Jana was mentioning, some of the advantages of environmental sustainability. You can have large open spaces. Of course, environmental sustainability is one of the main features of our own mission statement, which I, by the way, have with me and can read if you want me to. So green spaces that you mentioned, the democratic process, voluntary participation is key also. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of choice involved. You don't have to, for example, be an extrovert to enjoy living in co-housing. Mm-hmm. There's a place for introverts to be withdrawn a little bit more, and a place for their maybe extroverted spouse to go and be part of the community to a greater extent. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of variety like that, many, many options. And I think safety for children is another issue I'd mentioned too, because, again, the cars are not inside.
Right. Well, tell a little bit about the visit to Shadow Lake. What was your experience there, Jana?
It was very exciting to be at Shadow Lake. There was so much enthusiasm by the people who showed us around the tour. The children were playing all in the neighborhood, and they just wandered the neighborhood freely, just enjoying each other.
Like in the old days.
Like in the old days. And I think we've only lost that in recent years. But I think America has typically had much more of a sense of community, and I think co-housing helps to recreate that sense of community that has typically been a part of America, but which seemed to be losing in our fast-paced lifestyles.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, if I could add one more thing to that. One of the things that struck me was seeing older children playing with younger children. Mm-hmm. They're not siblings. They're not in the same family, but they grew up together, essentially, in this community, mm-hmm. and it really worked well.
There's water in the well, and the gate is always open. There's wood out in the shed. For tea and help us with the garden, and we'll help you rake your leaves. Well, money doesn't talk in this neighborhood. A healthy bank account won't do you no good. But hey, neighbor, I've seen that done before. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. Stay for tea and cut the children's hair before we go to the quilting bee. Well, rise and shine, what a glorious day. We're learning about living in the natural way. We're all Mother Nature's children, daughters and sons. Our numbers are many, but we all live as one. I'll play it for Mac.
And that was Water in the Well by Spirit of the West. So, Anne, just describe the whole group of people in your housing, in your co-housing situation where you live. Are there different ages?
Yes, we're an intergenerational community, and I think our age range ranges from about sort of early 30s up to, our eldest member I think is 85 right now. Mm-hmm. Our eldest member recently moved in with his daughter because she insisted he was 92, and she wanted him to come stay with her, but he was pretty independent but he was our eldest member. Mm-hmm. We have many retired people. We have people who work at home. We have most of the people, I'd say, work for NGOs, non-governmental organizations, or work for the government. But we have librarians and social workers. It's a mix of people. We have people mm-hmm. In the military. So it's a fairly broad mix of people. We're about 27% non-white and we are mixed gender, mixed race, mixed mm-hmm. religion, no religion. We are, we're pretty American pie.
But you said from the 30s up, so are there no children in your community?
Oh yeah, there are lots of kids in our community. We have 27 children. We have 64 adults, 27 children.
That is a village.
Dogs and way too many cats. So co-housing has made quite a, there are 140 co-housing communities in the U.S. alone. There are hundreds and hundreds in Europe. Mm-hmm. But there are 140 in the U.S. There are about 40 in development. and many, many more being talked about. What else can I tell you? You know, it's been here. It was brought here in the 1988 with a book called Co-Housing by Catherine McCammett and Charles Durrett. They were architecture students in Denmark. They saw this interesting community. They investigated it. They said, this is something we need to write about. We need to bring to the U.S. They did. And, you know, 20 years later, there are these 140 communities, but there's also a national conference. We have regional organizations like I represent Mid-Atlantic Co-Housing. That's my role here today. We're a consortium of 14 co-housing communities right in the D.C. area. So co-housing is pretty hot. Senior co-housing is the hottest niche in co-housing. There are four senior co-housing communities already established. It's a hot market. It's a hot market for developers because, won't go into that because that's not what part of this program is, but developers are latching onto this just because of the, it's an interesting way to do development that reduces risk. Mm-hmm. So it's a hot item right now.
Yeah. I was speaking with someone someone had a huge, huge acreage of forests and fields mm-hmm. and everything, and they divided it up. But everybody had, you know, like 10 acres all separated from one another. And then they had to build all these roads, and they were worried about the bears and keeping mm-hmm. the deers out and everything. So the idea of having a clustered community and then just having the wild space out there.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it is at Blacksburg. They have 17 mm-hmm. acres of woods with trails, mm-hmm. And then they have another 17 acres essentially with the housing on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
Oh. So what draws you to it? I mean, to say the need for community is one thing, but is it a place in your life? Is there the politics of it?
For me, the thing I think that attracts me the most is the idea of aging in a community that has children and not being age segregated in some retirement home, assisted living facility somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I can see joining it from now on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that as our resources become more scarce, petroleum prices are going to increase. It's going to be less available. I think it's going to be more important to enjoy our communities, to live more in our communities, to take advantage of the resources that we have in community and spend less of our time going out.
What do you find is being shared among the people that you're co-housing with?
We share meals together. We do car sharing. We share resources of all kinds. It really is that connection. I think it's the yearning for connection. It's the yearning, absolute deep rooted yearning that we have to be connected with other people. Co-housing really satisfies that. I mean, we are really a tight group. I know this is a little test I use when I go out and talk to people, and I ask them, and I'll just ask your listeners listening right now, how many of you know 10 of your neighbors' first and last names? And you know, depending on the neighborhood I'm in, usually I get, well, I know my neighbor next door and I know the neighbor across the street, mm-hmm. and that's it. And I know all 64 of my neighbors, first and last names, all of them. I know all of their kids, and I know all of their dogs, but not all their cats. I know their extended family. Here's how I know I live in co-housing. I know that if I call anybody, the person that I have the least relationship with of the 64, when I call that person and say, I need you, they will be there. And they know that they can call me at 2:00 in the morning and say, I need you, and I will come. And that's how I know I live in co-housing. I can depend on any of my neighbors anytime. That's a pretty big claim, but I can tell you, having lived there for 12 years, that that's true. I've never had anybody say, well, I'm a little busy right now.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you a quick quip from the Creating Co-Housing book that Ann mentioned. Mm-hmm. A fellow says, you know you live in co-housing because it takes you 45 minutes to get from your car to your home.
What a community. To get back to the development part, what do you see as the difference between, say, retrofitting some houses that are on the same block and maybe share an alley, or actually buying 23 acres of land and starting there? in this area?
Well, they're just different development processes, that's all.
Uh-huh.
A rehab is a whole different way of doing development than building new. And it really depends on the zoning. Uh-huh. It depends on what the master plan has and, you know, says about the area. It depends on what the city has decided they want to do with the property. They have some say in that. The local government has say in that. The banks have say in that. You know, doing development is very much like putting a play together. The producer of the play is the same as the developer. The producer gets what they call the book or the play, hires the actor, hires the director, hires the sound people and the engineers and that kind of stuff. And that's what a developer does, hires the architect and the building, the construction people, and does all that. It kind of directs the play. And that part is the same no matter what you're doing in development. But the other part of whether it's an adaptive reuse, is it a historic property? If it's a historic property, there are more hoops to jump through.
Uh-huh.
If it's not zoned correctly, there's a bunch of hoops to jump through to get it zoned correctly. So it's a rather sticky process. It's a complex process, I would say.
Well, I want to go back to a question that something you touched on earlier. You said I compared it with intentional communities.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that there doesn't have to be an ideology, but having talked with you this long and what little I know about it, it seems there is some commonality among the type of people who are interested in this. They're all different ages, they have all different professions, but what do you see is the common thread that pulls people like this together?
The common thread would be the desire to live in community. That's probably the most important aspect of it. I think that people who are interested in this tend to also be interested in sustainability and living in an environmentally sensitive manner.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most important aspect is just that desire for community.
Adele?
Really, it's self-selection. The mm-hmm. people who decide to be part of the co-housing community don't have any shared ideology. As we said, it's somebody who just chooses to be part of it. So, you know, it could be a big, wide variety.
Yeah. Well, we're getting toward the end. I know that there's something going on around here. You've been talking about Richmond, Virginia co-housing. So is there an opportunity for people to learn more about it or to become involved in it?
Absolutely. And that's what we're very much hoping will happen. We are still looking for our critical mass. We have at least a half dozen people who are interested at this point. We need a few more to make sure that this can start happening in Richmond. The best way to reach us is through our meetup site. And I'll just give the URL. It's www.meetup.com/Richmond-cohousing. And we'll be posting information about our next meeting. We have one coming up on May 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. And the address will be given on our meetup site. So all you need to do is join the meetup group and all the information will be there for you. So we invite people to join us. We encourage that.
So it's meetup.
.com/Richmond-cohousing.
Okay. All righty. And
great.
Yes, Anne.
Can I offer an opportunity too? Yeah. There are a couple of other things, ways that people can get involved or learn about co-housing. On Saturday, May 19th, we have the annual Mid-Atlantic co-housing bus tour that goes to four communities in the Mid-Atlantic area, and you can find out about that at midatlanticcohousing.org, midatlanticcohousing.org, all one word.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have 7 seats available on that if somebody wants to come.
Hop
There's
on
also
the bus.
A national conference in California in June.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much. We are moving right along here, and I want to thank Anne Zibaldo for coming in on our computer, and Adele McLean for driving across town, and Jana Hayes for driving into town.
Thank you, Sunny.
To participate in the discussion, please email your thoughts to sunny@wrir.org. Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR LP FM 97.3 and WRIR.org, and occasionally elsewhere. I'm grateful to all of you for coming. You can befriend us on Facebook by joining the Lightly on the Ground Radio group, where I will also put the connections that our friends have just mentioned here. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and I hope you will join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening, and thanks again for coming. Any wrap-up comments?
Many thanks.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Very much thanks, and I hope to see you and all your listeners at a co-housing event very soon.
Great. All right.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
This is great.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah.
Great. All right, I'm going to cut out because I got to go do a presentation.
Tell them it was our fault that you're late.
No problem. I hope to meet Adele and Jana and Sonny. I hope to meet you too, but yeah. I hope to meet all of you soon.